I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Richard Snyder, is an osteopathic physician, board certified in internal medicine and nephrology. His areas of specialization include kidney disease, high blood pressure, adrenal health, and medical education. He is associate professor of clinical medicine at Temple University School of Medicine and clinical professor of medicine at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. He is the author of 5 books, including Adrenal Fatigue for Dummies and What You Must Know About Kidney Disease, a practical guide for using conventional and complementary treatment. He is also the high blood pressure expert on about.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Snyder, and I look forward to hearing of adrenal fatigue. Now, first, what is adrenal fatigue?
Well, you know, in mainstream medicine, we're so used to thinking about, you know, streams of things, whether, you know, our adrenal glands do a lot. They make a lot of necessary hormones that allow us to function at our daily best on a daily basis. But with a Western lifestyle and stress and lack of sleep, you know, our adrenal glands, which pump out necessary hormones, which are necessary for us to, you know, to do our activities of daily living, they can get tired, you know, because especially without the necessary support, the necessary nutrition, lack of sleep, all of which can affect the function of the adrenal gland over time.
Mm-hmm.
And when the adrenal gland gets tired, it really is a fatiguing of the adrenal gland because it's really the inability of the adrenal gland to keep up with the necessary functions that it's able, that it has to do on a day-to-day basis. And this is a process that can occur over months to years, although in some people it can occur a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how would someone like me suspect that I might have adrenal fatigue?
Well, you know, early on there becomes, you know, there's early signs and symptoms. Some of it is, you know, there's certain signs like Ray gland sign, things that, you know, a doctor may be able to diagnose. But early signs and symptoms can be, you know, just getting up in the morning and not feeling like you've had a good night's sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Recurrent infections that don't seem to go away. You know, you get confused with what they call brain fog.
Mm-hmm.
And it can mimic a lot of signs of even thyroid. And thyroid and adrenal function almost kind of go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
But you often commonly see an, you know, an underactive thyroid, which can be connected with, you know, so both will actually have to be looked at. Other signs can be dizziness you start to notice when you stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the recurrent infections are just the pronounced fatigue that even if you take multiple naps during the day, you notice that you still feel tired or even more tired.
Mm-hmm.
The need to take an energy drink later in the day, recurrent yeast infection. And those are just some of the symptoms that go along with adrenal fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Then how would you evaluate and treat someone with adrenal fatigue?
You know, there's different questionnaires that's online and in the book that kind of goes over different symptoms. It not only looks at different symptoms, but also your past medical history.
Mm-hmm.
And looks at certain things like, you know, for example, if you've had a history of chronic illness or what illnesses that you've had, because things like diabetes, chronic illness, chronic respiratory infections, if a person has used steroids before, whether they've been oral steroids or even, you know, children with inhaled steroids,
mm-hmm.
Even history of even being on pain medications. You know, we just offered the institution that I'm at, I was one of the co-authors of, you know, people who are taking chronic pain medications can be a cause of fatigue of the adrenal gland.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, many things, plus the symptoms, your nutritional intake. Certainly poor nutrition is, you know, the adrenal gland needs nutrition like everything else. So it's a constellation of not just the questionnaire, and you get a composite score. In my book, I thought the test that I used was greater than 20. Certainly, that increases, you know, the risks you may have, likely have adrenal fatigue. Then there's specialized testing, which is actually salivary-based. There are some blood and urine tests that you can get, but it's salivary-based testing, not just looking at your adrenal gland, but looking at other hormones, you know, your sex hormones, the function of the pituitary gland, other things, to get what they call a full hormonal profile to really determine if you do indeed have adrenal fatigue, the hallmark of that is checking one of the most important hormones called cortisol and looking to see if there's a diurnal variation, meaning does it go up when you're stressed and, it's behavior during the day, and you keep a diary in terms of, when you're collecting, different samples. But so it's in some ways pretty much a combination of, salivary testing, but also, the questionnaire that kind of leads to let you know what the risk factors are, and this certainly would be an increased risk of developing this condition.
Great. Then what are some specific supplements or herbal remedies that could be used to treat the adrenal fatigue?
You know, there's so many of them that if you're, certain ones do, certain things. When I talked about it in the chapter, first off, nutrition first and foremost. We need to begin to meet that naturally in terms of more of a plant-based diet high in antioxidants because your adrenal glands need that nutritional support. If we're just talking about vitamins, magnesium is important for adrenal function. Vitamin C, the adrenal gland has some of the highest concentrations of vitamin C, at least 2,000 milligrams of an ester form of vitamin C a day. Vitamin D is also important for function.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about, things to boost the energy, coenzyme Q10, D-ribose are very important for increasing ATP production within the cells.
Mm-hmm.
Carotenoids are a form of antioxidants that have some of their highest concentrations in the adrenal gland. So I try to get people in addition to that on a carotenoid complex. In addition, something to help you go to sleep, things like L-threonine or valerian root to make sure that you're getting that good night's sleep. And you begin to go from there. But so you're looking at things increasing energy, antioxidants, or specific and identifying specific nutritional deficiencies. And of course, don't forget about the gut. The idea of probiotics to reduce inflammation, which is a cause of adrenal fatigue. And also, if a person has been on antibiotics or treating fungal overgrowth. So I try to put them on an anti-yeast regimen as well, and then a composite of that. And also, if they need supplementation for blood pressure and things like that, then you do that too. But it's a combination of nutritional support, antioxidant support, treating yeast syndrome, and normalizing gut flora.
That's interesting because you mentioned the candida or the yeast overgrowth. Is there a relationship then between that and the adrenal fatigue?
I think that untreated yeast overgrowth is a cause of secondary stimulation of the adrenal gland. So, there's chronic illness. Your adrenal gland is only meant, initially to respond to an acute illness, to acute injury.
Mm-hmm.
So chronic illness and chronic yeast overgrowth is a chronic inflammatory state, and inflammation causes increased overwork of the adrenal gland.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but the increased cortisol, I feel, serves as a nidus that exacerbates or causes even more yeast activity to grow. So one kind of gets the other. So, we really kind of need to get the yeast in check if we're going to talk about treating the adrenal fatigue, because I believe that the yeast overgrowth is a stimulant for chronic adrenal fatigue.
Also, you mentioned some of the same things that you use for heart problems, like the D-ribose and the magnesium, vitamin C. Is there a relationship between heart problems and adrenal fatigue?
If you were to do a Venn diagram of all overlapping circles, I think that stress, you talk about cholesterol, and there's a lot of things about cholesterol that is a culprit. I think it's more of a byproduct. I think stress and increased hormones that are made by the adrenal gland, things like epinephrine and norepinephrine, certainly increase the risk of developing a heart problem. There's actually a syndrome called broken heart syndrome, which is a real medical diagnosis, which pretty much deals with acute stress and increased production of these hormones by the adrenal gland. It's predominantly seen in women, but it is a real problem. So not learning how to deal with stress and learning and understanding the effect that stress hormones can have on our body, especially our heart, is very important. And that's one of the main reasons why stress is deleterious to heart function. The role of things that help with the bioenergetics of the heart also help with the bioenergetics of the adrenal gland. Because at the end of the day, the adrenal gland also has an energy deficit, which needs to be treated just as the heart does.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like a heart smart plan.
Mm-hmm. The D-ribose, it says that some people that are diabetic may not be able to take that. And I have sometimes a candida overgrowth, and I found that that's the D-ribose seems to activate that also.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. My experience, and I have, you know, I have people that I start on the powdered form, and I start them at doses of 2,500 milligrams.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few, you know, some people, when they go above 10,000 milligrams, they begin to have diarrhea. I have not seen problems with hyperglycemia or worsening diabetic function because ribose is part of the ATP, the oxyribose. It's not a, while it is a sugar per se, it's not a sugar like maltose or fructose or something which is going to increase your blood sugar and stimulate an insulin release that much in terms of hyperglycemia.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a little a different kind of sugar, and I have not seen the problems with hyperglycemia, nor do I think that it's a stimulant for yeast overgrowth, at least in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I wondered, since you know, are dealing with patients, so it may be something else then.
But I tend to start slow, and I go 2,500 milligrams, and then I'll
leave.
And I know some people that will start with 5 or 10,000, and you see me giving it up to 1,500. 2,500 has just been a safe dose for me to start with, not that it's unsafe, but just, you know, tolerability and diarrhea has been the real big one for me at higher doses. So I tend to go 2,500, even divided doses, you know, per day with, you know, they can just put it in their hot tea or coffee in it. And I really haven't seen too much of a hyperglycemia.
I wonder if the D-ribose would be useful for people with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of data with that in the sense that, you know, fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome mean an energy deficit. So it's not just that, but I try to use a combination of the D-ribose, the magnesium malate, malic acid in terms of its effect on ATP, plus coenzyme Q10, plus PQQ. The pure choline, which is somewhat new, which is also works synergistically with coenzyme Q10. And people seem to feel a little bit better with that. Again, I start slow and I try to introduce certain things or try to get a supplement form that has a combination of those things in it.
Dr. Snyder, which magnesium do you use with your patients?
I like malic. Well, there's a couple that I use. If a person, there's a couple things. I like magnesium malate because of its energy ATP aspect. I've also used from life extension the magnesium threonate because it does penetrate the blood-brain barrier. In people, you know, I try to keep things simple, so I don't do like urine magnesiums and things like that just because it's just for patients. Plus, I have a kidney practice, so I see more patients with kidney disease. So, you know, I sometimes use like the topical magnesium oil or gel if I need to get levels up. I don't use magnesium oxide as much anymore because the absorption is very low. It's only like 4%. But pretty much I try to use magnesium malate or a chelated form of magnesium.
I think I am using glycinate.
Yeah, that's a good absorbed form.
Is it?
I send a lot of people to local health food stores and I kind of know what they carry a little bit. Or I'll get a calcium and magnesium supplement together. Because if they have to take calcium, they just have to take magnesium at the same time and minimize the effect of the diarrhea from the magnesium.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why they recommended this one over the oxide because of the diarrhea. Because I take about 1,000 milligram a day of the magnesium.
And that's pretty standard.
Is it? Yeah.
I'll do like 600 to 1,000 milligrams. A lot of it depends on a person's diet. You know, if a person is... if a person's eating more vegetables, more seeds, more nuts, all, you know, and depending upon their levels, and then add supplement as much. But most people, they need more of the supplementation because their diet's more refined.
Is there then other things that in the diet besides what you mentioned that people should consider that helps?
I, I think they need a diet high in antioxidants, you know, so fruits and vegetables, things which are pigmented, you know, the carotenoid complex,
mm-hmm.
you know, your fruits and your vegetables, which are pigmented, are fantastic for your adrenal support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we forget that our adrenal gland needs nutritional support just like other organs of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, pretty much there are certain things that are you know, great. Green vegetables, kale is fantastic for adrenal support. Blueberry, any kind of berry is great for adrenal support.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, you know, things of which you need. In terms of green vegetables, if a person is under active thyroid, they may watch certain green vegetables like broccoli, things like that, which may be more what they call like a goitrogen, which can affect the thyroid function.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, if they have, I check your thyroid functions as well and see what their levels are doing. But pretty much, you know, you can't go wrong with a green vegetable, kale. Sometimes I'll do like a green smoothie or even just like a Barlands green type of thing to get the chlorophyll and other plant-based antioxidants. You know, there's certain things I like with, you know, protein support with leucine, especially if the person, you know, needs a little bit more energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but pretty much more of a plant-based, you know, fruit and vegetable type of basis, and we talked about what other supplementation that we need to kind of get them through where they are to help adrenal gland function better.
Do you think juicing is a fad, or do you think it's here to stay?
I think juicing is good. I think that, you know, that every time I turn around, someone else has a new juicer. But I think that if you're a purist, you know, there are certain vegetables which are better sliced than diced.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the enzymatic activity of things, I think juicing is great. But the idea is you have to drink it fresh that day.
Mm-hmm.
If you leave it more than 24 hours, you know, it loses its effectiveness. So for those that don't like the juice, I at least try to give them a green drink in the morning. And I'm a kidney doctor, so one of the focus for me is on pH.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think if we normalize the pH in the morning, that also affects the adrenal gland because acidity in the diet that we eat is so acidic that, you know, especially in the morning, you know, if you're having a bagel and a cup of coffee with a whole bunch of sugar, I mean, that's just going to drive the adrenal gland overwork in the morning, plus if you just drive that acidity. So, I like juicing. I think that if you're going to choose some fruits, you want to avoid those that are high in sugar because sugar drives inflammation, and I think it also worsens adrenal function. It also drives the cannabis overgrowth. So I try to minimize sugar as much as I can. I like
mm-hmm.
the idea of,
mm-hmm.
of juicing, but I think you have to choose and stay away from the fruits that are high in sugar content.
Mm-hmm.
Things like bananas are a no-no for me.
Mm-hmm.
I like apples in the juicing for the pectin and quercetin and things like that, but no-no to the banana.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Snyder, what are your views on organic versus regular food?
You know, I spoke a couple of years ago at a Canadian Health Food Association,
mm-hmm.
and that was more for alkaline water. But I happened to sit in, and this is when the GMO movement was just in its beginnings. And if you've ever seen films of what they do to, mm-hmm. to the animals when they raise them in terms of the antibiotics and everything else, you know, you want to know what's being done to what you're eating. So I think that, you know, organic represents a standard that, you know, used to what you know with health. I'm all for organic. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of studies out there that in terms of even grass-fed beef has the same antioxidant diet as even salmon.
Mm-hmm.
But you just have to know, you know, things that are more free-range, because I think that the chemicals and preservatives, I mean, you know, I'm a kidney doctor, and you read
mm-hmm.
about things
mm-hmm.
like insecticides and things like that worldwide being undiagnosed cause of kidney. And, you know, the length of pesticides for gluten and celiac, which is now 1 in 100,
mm-hmm.
used to be 1 in 10,000 not too long ago. So I am all for organic. I think that there, you know, some of the studies that were controversial or whatever, I think when you follow through, organic is going to be better than non-organic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And prevention. I know that you're very much into preventing things. So what can people do to prevent thyroid, adrenal problems?
You know, there's one of the things I had wanted to do was to write a book on preventive health, but there's someone who kind of beat me to it, and I think did a better job. And if I, again, I always had a good experience with reading with him. And his name is Dr. Jeffrey Bland, and he wrote a book. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but I read it, and I think that there's a book out there for preventive health. That book is it. And it's just, you know, it's more than vaccinations, or the vaccinations are important, but again, that's a whole other topic.
Right.
I think that, you know, understanding nutrition and understanding that your body needs nutrition, nutritional support to survive, you know, and it needs detoxification. So I think, you know, the basis of prevention for me is improving how the cells talk to one another, improve how the body talks to one another, exercise, detoxification, and recognize the environment that you're in. So everything goes back to nutrition. Mm-hmm. You know, and we begin to understand with all the science of genomics how plant DNA talks to our own DNA, and then understanding, you know, the role of probiotics. And I think, you know, prevention comes from lowering chronic inflammation and improving nutrition. And I think you begin from there. So a plant-based diet is as much as can be, in addition to probiotics, making sure your vitamin D levels and omega-3 content, understanding the world around you, incorporating meditation and yoga into your day.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It's not easy.
No,
it
isn't.
Say that it is. Mm-hmm. And I have days where, you know, I just have to begin again the next day. But if you try to make that a focus every day, I think that we'd have a healthier nation.
I think it's so exciting to see doctors beginning to use a holistic approach. And I think my doctor, well, it wasn't his idea, it was Edgar Cayce's idea, but I think Edgar Cayce was so progressive in his readings about using a holistic approach, and that's why I used it when I had lung cancer, you know, because to me, your optimism, your faith, your spirituality is as important as anything physical that the doctors gave me when I had lung cancer. And I see more and more doctors now. I interviewed a physician who grew up in Burma, and her mother was a cardiologist. And so she saw all the Eastern. Then she went to Harvard and got her cardiology. And she said she may put patients on drugs, but her goal is to get them off as quick as possible. And she teaches Tai Chi, she teaches meditation, she teaches all of these holistic things in her cardiology center. And I'm finding more and more physicians are incorporating much more of a holistic approach in their practices. And I think this is so exciting.
If you look at the price, the cost of medicine and what we spend per patient, and, you know, we're not any healthier. And then you start to see, you know, where do we cut? The answer is to kind of go back and, I think, my opinion, incorporate some of these other things. And I think that there's nothing wrong with medications, but I think talking about nutrition, emphasizing the exercise and having and adding that, I think, is what we're missing. It's more than just a pill for every ill. It's talking about how to prevent illness and how to, you know, and I think that, you know, doctors are wanting to be more satisfied in terms of how they can better treat patients. And I think that you're seeing more of an embracement of both. I think, you know, like you and I were talking before, you know, I'm somewhat caught in the middle because I think there's things that I learned that new medications really do have a place. And so, like, when I read the book about adrenal fatigue and talking about salt tablets, and I, you know, I've gotten some angry comments from people saying, you know, natural, you know, but a person who's coming in with a blood pressure of 70, you know, they need this to get their blood pressure up until we can normalize their adrenal gland. It's a short-term answer. You know what I mean? You try to do other things, but at the same time, the person has to function. And other forms of salt out there, you know, like one said to me, why don't you use Himalayan pink crystal salt? Well, I do, but understand that it can lower blood pressure and it's also higher in potassium, which a person who has adrenal fatigue can have higher potassium levels. So that wouldn't be my first choice. And the same thing with the salt XC salt. I wouldn't do that initially. You know, so you can't please everybody.
Right.
You just you try to do the best you can, but the focus is always trying to incorporate as much natural as you can.
Great. Then, Dr. Snyder, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at your books services and how the listeners can reach you?
No, I'm just thankful that, you know, you have me on the show, and I think if we ignore our adrenal gland and we don't pay attention to it, if those organs that we don't pay attention to, that it's in, you know, in later stages that we begin to pay attention to them. The kidneys and the adrenals being two of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does a lot, and I think we need to pay attention to maintaining and improving its function.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because it's a coordinator of everything in the body, and I think that's one of the keys to optimal health.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then would you tell us about your books and services and how the listeners can reach you?
Sure. The book will be, this was a labor of love. It was something I had wanted to do for a while. It was done with this, as well as my co-author, Wendy Jo Peterson, who's a nutritionist. She's based in California and also Texas. And she can be reached at her, wendyjopeterson.com. Hang with me. I can reach them on the Facebook page. Or if someone can get in contact with me, they go to St. Luke's University Health Network.
Mm-hmm.
And my information is there. I'm in the process of redoing my website, so the information isn't up there, but it should be up soon. And the book was just talking about different ways of, you know, just the things that I've seen and the things I've tried to recommend to people to improve overall health and adrenal function, because I think it's something that people aren't aware of, and I think that not addressing those issues is so important in terms of improving the health. So I just wanted to talk about, you know, the function here of the body, the adrenal gland, and what it does, and what adrenal fatigue is, and how it impacts people, even though they may not be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you very much. This has been very interesting, and it's something that I didn't know much about, and I doubt that most of my listeners know much about it, but it is such an important aspect of health and also the kidneys. I had a brother that had kidney problems and was on dialysis for many years before he died, and it's not a nice way to live. So if there's any way that these conditions can be prevented, I think the listeners need to pay attention.
I think the big thing is, number one, a plant-based diet. I think a plant-based diet, and I've worked with a couple of nutritionists, can actually improve or maintain kidney disease. Protein overworks the kidney. Acidity overworks the kidney.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think the fruits and vegetables, say an alkaline diet is protective for the kidney. A plant-based diet is protective for the kidney. And there's some evidence of low vitamin D levels can affect kidney.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you start from there. Also, watching your blood pressure and blood sugar levels.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes back to nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I thank you very much, Dr. Snyder. I appreciate this, and I hope to talk with you again.
Dr. Helvey, thank you for having me on your show. My pleasure, sir.
Great. My second guest, Marnie Wasserman, is a graduate of the Institute of Holistic Nutrition in Toronto and the Natural Gourmet Culinary School in New York, and is the founder of Marnie Wasserman's Food Studio and Lifestyle Shop, located in Midtown Toronto, where she teaches her signature cooking classes and offers collaborative workshops and urban retreats. This is also a place where she features her favorite sustainable superfood products. As a prominent figure of health and nutrition in Toronto, Marnie is a regular contributor to Chatelaine, Huffington Post, and Tonic magazine. She has made several TV appearances, been hosted on radio talk shows, consulted with the Windsor Arms Hotel for vegan and vegetarian menus, and participates in several live speaking and cooking demonstrations. If this wasn't enough, she's also the author of book Plant-Based Diet for Dummies, Fermenting for Dummies, and several well-received plant-based ebooks. You can learn more about Marnie by visiting her Facebook page, following her on Instagram, Twitter, or by checking out her website, www.MarnieWasserman.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Marnie, and I look forward to hearing about plant-based diets. Now first, what is a plant-based diet?
A plant-based diet is a diet that focuses on plant foods, such as leafy greens, grains, legumes, fruits, all kinds of different root vegetables, as well as nuts and seeds, and getting a foundation of that in your diet in addition to whatever else you might be eating, or that could be the core of what you are eating. Mm-hmm. So that is my definition of a plant-based diet.
Mm-hmm. And how does one get full when they're on this diet?
Well, the best way is to make sure that you're getting a balance from all those different areas that I just mentioned, and that you're eating enough healthy, clean, plant-based proteins, good fats, complex carbohydrates, and making sure that you're eating frequent meals throughout the day, and that when you are putting those meals together, that they're balanced. So you've got a little bit of mm-hmm. some greens as well as some grains or some protein, and making sure that you're feeling satisfied, because otherwise, if people just stick, and a lot of people who become vegetarian, sometimes they will just eat carbohydrates or refined carbohydrates or just eat, you know, junk food and desserts and not really realize that, you know, that mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. going to fill them up or balance them. So it's really important to be educated on how to actually get full with the fiber, with the minerals and the vegetable and the vitamins and minerals that are available in the plant foods.
Mm-hmm. And what are the best protein sources from plants?
Some of the best protein sources on a plant-based diet come from beans and legumes, things like tempeh, which is fermented soybean, grains such as quinoa, or it's also considered a seed, amaranth. Some of these, you know, really easy to digest grains are also very high in protein. Mm-hmm. Greens have protein in as well. A lot of people don't consider their leafy green vegetables like kale and collards and chard to have protein, but they do. Avocado has protein, nuts and seeds have protein, and then you can often supplement as well with plant-based protein powders if need be from brown rice or hemp or pea protein, and hemp seeds and a lot of seeds as well are extremely high in protein.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I tried the hemp seeds. I didn't much care for them, and I stuck them in the refrigerator, and they've been in there since, so I guess I won't be using that again, but I use several of the things that you mentioned.
Well, yeah, it's a matter of learning how you can add in the hemp seeds potentially into different recipes and maybe things that you mm-hmm. you could throw them into a salad, or you can throw them into a smoothie or even a breakfast cereal. So there's ways to add them in so that they're not the dominant flavor, but you're still getting a nutritional benefit from them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have heard that there are certain combinations that you need in order to get adequate vitamins and minerals. Is that correct?
Well, in terms of, you know, a lot of people over the years have put different proteins together or different foods together to get the right amount of protein, and that's often a big misconception that you need to eat certain foods together mm-hmm. to get, you know, the right protein or the right minerals and vitamins. And ideally, you just want to look at your day, and you want to look at the accumulation of different things that you are eating in a day or over the course of a couple of days to make sure that you're getting in the nutrients that you need. You don't necessarily in every meal or combination that you're eating have to always think about, mm-hmm. you know, a certain, you know, like brown rice with chickpeas to make a complete protein, or a piece of sprouted bread with some almond butter. It's ideal for sure, because that's, as I said, was saying earlier, those are the types of combinations that will help you feel more full and more satisfied at the end of a meal. Mm-hmm. But if you don't end up doing that, don't think that you won't get the accumulation of amino acids or different minerals and vitamins in your body to get the benefit, as long as it is coming from all those different sources.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I try to make sure that I get enough protein, and also I make sure I get a fair amount of potassium, because I seem to need a lot of potassium. I think I mentioned to you I'm gluten sensitive, so I eat a lot of the rice things, but soy I don't care much for, so I do occasionally get something with soy in, but not very often.
Right.
Then who is a plant-based diet good for?
The plant-based diet really is for anyone, because even though the title of my book or the way we're approaching this right now is plant-based diet, but it's actually, in fact, not a diet. It's a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone can take on eating more plants, no matter what they're currently eating or where they're currently at. So if they can just add in more kale, broccoli, spinach, different kinds of seeds, different kinds of grains, just rounding out their current diet with more plants, ideally anyone can change up their ratio so that plants are the more dominant of their meals or their intake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think of juicing?
I think juicing is an excellent part of a healthy diet. You know, whether someone wants to take it on and go juice for a couple of days or go on a cleanse or a fast, that's a personal preference. But incorporating just juice regularly as a snack or a meal or a nourishing beverage is an excellent way to get a mega dose of nutrients in a concentrated amount into their body, into their blood. So I love green juices. I try and get as many green juices as I can throughout the week into my body, whether I'm making them myself or if I'm out and about on the go and I'm able to get my hands on one, then I'm a big fan of juices and smoothies as well, too. So smoothies are for sure an easier food for someone to, like between juices and smoothies, I'd definitely recommend someone make smoothies first because it's a lot easier for someone to make a smoothie at home or to get a smoothie, and you can make different kinds of combinations that often are more palatable for a lot of people who are just starting their journey. So absolutely, between juices and smoothies, I recommend both of them, and maybe start with a smoothie and then work your way into juicing.
Now, this is a simple question, but what is a smoothie?
A smoothie is a blended beverage of different fruits, possibly some vegetables, some kind of liquid. It could be water, it could be a coconut milk, a rice milk, a hemp milk, whatever kind of seed-based milk, and then adding in different kinds of ingredients, which could be a plant-based protein powder, could be some hemp seeds, could be some chia seeds, and you blend that up in a blender, and then you've got this thick kind of milkshake-like beverage that is very nourishing and really healthy, but without the ice cream and the dairy that would be found in a typical milkshake. But it's a breakfast. That is my typical breakfast, is making myself a blended smoothie.
Someone recently told me at the supermarket, he's a vegan, about using twice as much almond milk as chia seeds and mixing them up and putting them in the refrigerator overnight. And I add a little stevia, and you have a little pudding in the morning.
Absolutely. Really great. I even have a recipe of that in my book as well, and that's something that I consume for breakfast on a regular basis, is a chia pudding or a chia porridge. And, yeah, you use double the amount of liquid, and almond milk is a great choice. Some chia seeds, you can put in a sweetener. Then you can throw in blueberries, banana, walnuts, cinnamon, and have this. Any way you would make up a bowl of porridge or oatmeal, you can do that to chia seeds and have an incredible, energizing, protein-rich, healthy fat breakfast.
You mentioned protein powders. What do you think of those?
Well, I'm very picky when it comes to those because there's a lot of not-so-good ones that are available, and then there are quite a few good ones as well. And they need to be, first and foremost, they need to be organic. They need to be plant-based. Preferably sprouted or raw. So I use a company called Sun Warrior. They have a plant-based protein powder, and it's delicious, and it's a great way for me. It's like insurance that I'm getting an extra dose of quality protein into my smoothies, but I also rely on whole foods themselves. I also very much rely on nuts and seeds and, you know, beans and greens and avocado as well. But I do tend to, because I am active, I do work out, so getting that extra bit of quality protein is really, really essential for me. But making sure that if someone is hearing this right now, that you're staying away from the whey-based protein powders, which are dairy-based, and a lot of them can be very acidic to the body, and they, over time, don't satisfy you the same way that a plant-based protein, which is totally 100% food-sourced first. So that's where I'm coming from.
Well, you mentioned the whey. I don't use whey, but I do sometimes use an egg white protein powder.
Right.
That is just egg whites.
See, I personally wouldn't recommend that for a couple of reasons. One is egg whites, people have a lot of allergies to egg whites, and if it's being dehydrated into a powder, then first of all, you are losing so much of you know, eggs do have quite a bit of protein. If you are going to consume an egg, then it should be organic, free range in its whole form. But if you get a dehydrated version of it and throw that into a smoothie, it's kind of lost so much along the way. Whereas something like a plant-based powder, the difference is because it is plant-based, often a lot of them are sprouted, so they're actually kept in a very kind of hyper-nutrient state, and they don't really lose a lot of their nutrients, whereas something that's more animal-based will lose a lot of its nutrients through the processing.
I do use plant-based also, but I do use that other one sometimes too.
There's so many options out there. It's just about becoming educated and learning the different ones.
Right. As far as the beans, do you have preferences for those? And do you also use lentils?
I do use lentils. I love lentils. And I love chickpeas, black beans, kidney beans. So whether I'm cooking them up and just putting them onto salads or into a stew or a soup or blending them into a dip, absolutely. Beans are, you know, a big part of my diet. They're delicious. And when you cook them from scratch, they taste so good.
I talked with a neurologist earlier and someone that specializes in adrenals, and he was talking about how a plant-based diet was much better for the kidneys because it was so difficult for the kidneys to deal with meat and things like that.
For sure. You know, the body has to do a lot of work to break down animal protein and especially cooked animal protein. So, again, if someone is keeping that in their diet, I do recommend that it's a smaller percentage of your diet overall, whereas plants are the majority because your body does handle plants a lot better and can extract so many nutrients from plants. And then, you know, then you go from there. And if you need a little bit of animal protein in there and that works for you, then by all means. But the amount of meat that a majority of people are eating these days and the quality of the meat that a majority of people are eating these days is quite unpleasurable and unsatisfying to the body, and it does take a lot of work for those kidneys to process down processed meats or unconventional meats as well, too. So I do recommend if you are going to eat meat, eat grass-fed, clean stuff and keep it minimal.
And you mentioned organic. Now, do you have trouble finding places to eat out when you want a plant-based diet and you want it organic?
It's not hard to eat out plant-based. Organic definitely is a little bit more challenging. You know, it's nice to see more and more restaurants starting to embrace local and organic ingredients. Definitely, I have to do a little bit more extra research to look for that. But I do know that when I am dining out, that is something I'm going to have to give up a little bit, is the organic factor. When I'm cooking for myself and teaching my cooking classes, very little compromise. I'm pretty much very close to 100% organic with the stuff that I'm buying, with a little bit of room for error depending on what I can find. But when I'm dining out, it's tough to get organic all the time. But plant-based is quite easy. It's, it's great between, you know, Italian, Mediterranean, or some of the vegetarian restaurants that are available to me, whether in my own city, Toronto, or when I'm traveling. I make sure I do my research so that I can find exactly what I'm looking for and what I need to feel nourished when I'm dining out.
Right. Now, you said then that plant-based diet is a lifestyle and not really a diet. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's something that I really encourage people to take on as an ongoing journey, not to take it on for, you know, a week or 2 weeks with the goal of losing weight or changing their health quickly, and then they can go back to whatever they were eating before. It's the more plants you eat, it's an accumulating effect. The better you're going to look, the better you're going to feel, and hopefully you'll reach your weight loss or potentially even weight gain goals, depending on on the body. And so it's something that you want to embrace for life, because there is more research pointing in the direction that eating more plants is what actually can help people with diabetes, with heart disease, all the different kinds of ailments that people are experiencing. The more quality plants people are eating, the better they feel. So if it's just embraced as part of an overall lifestyle, then you're going to feel better for it, and that's what I really try and encourage.
So you've mentioned kidney, heart, and diabetes. Are there other things that you would want to say about the health benefits of being on a plant-based diet?
For sure. So, well, other things that people might encounter is anything from cancer to skin conditions to gut conditions. All of these ailments can be healed by a plant-based diet over time, again, and depending on the how far you might take it within a specific category. So if someone is going through chemotherapy or in an escalated stage of cancer, there might be certain elements to a plant-based diet that they would tweak. Maybe it's juicing, or maybe it's macrobiotics, or maybe it's, you know, more raw or whatever it is. So all of these, there's documentaries, there's books, there's movies, there's all kinds of research pointing towards a lot of these everyday, you know, chronic conditions that people are dealing with to mm-hmm. definitely more extreme ones as well, too. Mm-hmm. And then just the everyday person who's just preventing energy, better sleep, better elimination, brighter eyes, better skin. Those are some of the amazing benefits that you will experience just eating more plants.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned cancer, Marnie. When I had lung cancer 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
what type of diet do you think the doctor put me on? 75% raw fruit and vegetables, nuts
yep.
and grains, and I could have some additional cooked. And that was it.
Right.
40 years ago, can you imagine that?
Yeah. How did you feel?
I remember feeling great, but he was very progressive. But unfortunately, when you have progressive doctors, they're often harassed, and within
yep.
5 years, the state had taken his medical license because he was advocating natural ways to deal with cancer.
Yeah, because there wasn't enough medicine being pushed. So
right, and not enough money.
It's so unfortunate, eh?
Right. Then, Marnie, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at your book and your services and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, just I encourage people to try something new in the plant-based world. You know, maybe it's a new, different kind of leafy green or a different new whole grain, a different legume. Experiment. When you're next to me at the grocery store, the next time you are at the farmer's market or wherever you do your shopping, try and get something a little bit different just to take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
Then would you tell us about your book and your services and how the listeners can reach you?
Sure. So my book, Plant-Based Diet for Dummies, came out this summer, and that's available on Amazon as well as local wherever you might be in the States or in Canada, local bookstores such as Barnes & Noble or Chapters Indigo. My website is marniewasserman.com. That's MarniWasserman. And I teach cooking classes, and I've got a blog. I've got lots of resources on my website as well as some ebooks to download. So there's lots of, you know, whether you're near or far, whether you want to come to my food studio in Toronto for a cooking class or whether you want to just engage with me online, I can be found on my website and through all the social media channels as well, too, at Marnie Wasserman. Just my name on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Marnie. And it's been helpful, and especially the protein bit. And I hope I can talk with you again, and I'll look for your book since I've found some of the books for dummies useful.
So, yeah, they're great books. Good resources for anyone, whether you're a beginner or whether you're a novice. Like, there's just something in them for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you very much, Marnie. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my websites, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the past shows from the last 5.5 years under the blog with a search engine so you can look for a specific topic. You will also find a place to sign up for a free monthly newsletter on holistic health and the latest information on research on cancer, also under the blog. I also invite you to my website, beatlungcancer.net, where you will find information on my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. You will also find endorsements. You will find additional information about the book, and you will also find a site where you can purchase the book from me, or you can also purchase it at Amazon.com. I also invite you to join me on Facebook under Carl Helvey, or under Holistic Health Show, or under Beat Lung Cancer. I also invite you to join me on LinkedIn under Carl Helvey, or on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, and I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.